Dear listeners, welcome at yet another episode of this fourth season of Meet the Expert podcast series. And in this series, together with well-known experts from around the globe, we explore challenges and opportunities in the pig veterinary world. And in this episode, we will spend attention to Mycoplasma hypopneumoniae, better known as MHIO, which is known for causing enzootic pneumonia. And with us today is Dr. Evelien Biebout of Ghent University in Belgium. And she must be getting used to being called doctor, as she obtained her PhD earlier this year. Welcome, Dr. Biebout.
Thank you very much, Vincent, for this introduction, and thanks for inviting me for this episode.
Thank you. We're happy to have you here. The Meet the Expert podcast series is a co-production of Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health and Pig Progress. My name is Vincent Lebeek, and I'm editor of Pig Progress, and I'm the host of today's episode. Our guest, Dr. Biebout, conducted research on Mycoplasma hypopneumoniae, specific immune responses in swine. And currently she focuses on enhanced and cost-effective biosecurity in livestock production. And she does this within the framework of the Horizon Europe Biosecure project. Now, I predict for this big editor, this podcast is not going to be a walk in the park today. So some veterinary knowledge may be required, but I'm going to ask quite often to explain this in day-to-day terms, but I believe during your studies, you have done that yourself, haven't you?
Yes, I did. I did some talks on international conferences, but I also worked with veterinarians and students, so many different people to explain things about in different ways, so it should be fine, I think.
Fantastic. Well, let's start going. We've had quite a lot of big veterinary experts in our podcast so far, but I cannot recall we've been talking about MHIO a lot. Can you share with us what is your fascination with this bacteria?
Well, I think it's quite fascinating that MHIO causes a respiratory disease. Like you said, it's enzootic pneumonia, and it causes quite some economic losses. And although many research has been done on MHIO, there is still much things that are not known that might be necessary to get better vaccinations in order to reduce those economic losses. And I was really eager to help fill those knowledge gaps and get a better insight on how MHIO is working in the pig population.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's probably one of those diseases that's not like an all of a sudden an emerging disease, so everybody's full focused on the pathogen. So you get a bit different dynamics in research as well, I suppose.
Yes, and I think that's a bit a problem that many farmers are used to MHIO on the farm. It's normal that some pigs are coughing, but when you tell them that they have economic losses because of it, then they think like, oh, maybe we should do something about it. And then the attention comes. But in general, attention on it is quite low.
Yeah. Well, talking about that, could you, a little bit for those who kind of want to get their facts straight, what are the characteristics of enzootic pneumonia?
So it's a respiratory infection, and we see that it causes a dry, non-productive cough when it's clinical, but it can, of course, be also subclinical. We see that in the clinical, but as well in the subclinical pigs, there is also a higher feed conversion ratio, a lower daily growth. They get more susceptible for other infections. And of course, there is a treatment cost, and it leads to the economic losses, of course. The fact is that there's not a high mortality unless it's a complicated infection, but there is a high morbidity in those pigs. So it's actually quite important disease. And all pigs can become infected with MHIO, but clinical symptoms are mostly seen in the fattening pigs. And that's also where we see those economic losses.
Yeah, I see. So we're talking about a persistent cough, usually not causing death or anything, but particularly the finisher pigs are the ones that where you see the bacteria being most present normally.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and just to quickly recap, there is a few methods how producers and veterinarians could deal with MHIO.
Yes, when there's really problems with MHIO on the farm, antibiotics can be a solution. But I think more important is to prevent it by having a good biosecurity, by vaccinating young piglets, but also breeding animals, and to try to get the breeding population as free as possible of MHIO.
Excellent. Okay, well, that sets the stage. Let's turn to your PhD that you got earlier this year. Your study was about the prevalence of MHIO in sows and gilts on Belgian farrow to finish farms. In a few sentences, what was the bigger idea behind that study?
The idea is that we know that MHIO can be transmitted from the sows and the gilts to the piglets already in the farrowing unit. So piglets become infected at a very young age. And this is something you often don't see because they only start coughing when they are older, economic losses, or at an older age. But actually, it starts with this breeding population that transmits it to those young piglets. So if we can get more insight in how MHIO behaves in this breeding population and we are able to stop or limit the transmission to the piglets, it might be a huge difference. So that's why I really wanted to focus on this breeding population.
I see that. And when I look back in all the literature, the breeding population is always mentioned as also being part of an MHIO strategy. So what part of the knowledge was still missing?
It's like you said, they often take a small look at the breeding population as a part of a larger study, focusing then on piglets and the fattening pigs. But we really wanted to see in this breeding population, how does it behave? Is there a difference between sows and gilts? Is there a difference in the time they are in their reproductive cycle? Does it matter to get a better insight in it? With a final goal of having a better acclimation and prevention in this breeding population.
I see. And if I'm correct, you kind of looked very detailed into how the bacteria spread.
Yes, we took blood samples to take a look at the antibodies, which is often done in practice, but we also took some tracheobronchial swabs to test with PCR for really the presence of DNA of the bacteria to really be sure if these animals were infected or not.
I see. You subdivided the study into three aims, so to say, one related to gilts, one related to farrowing, and one related to fattening pigs. So every time one aspect in the pig farm was zoomed into. Let's take them step by step. I think that's the easiest way to do. So the first area of interest, the reproductive cycle where the gilts are. You zoomed in there on the gilts predominantly, and you described that as a prevalence study. What did you do there exactly?
So we visited here in Belgium, so in Flanders, 10 farms with breeding animals, so farrow to finish farms. And on those farms, we selected in total 80 breeding animals in four different moments of reproductive cycle. We always try to do half gilts, half sows, and we took blood of them and a tracheobronchial swab to see if they had antibodies against MHIO and if they were infected, to get an overview like gilts, sows, is there a difference, and different time points in this reproductive cycle to get an overview of the prevalence of MHIO on the farm.
I see. And when you're looking at these swabs, would you use ELISA or would you use PCR there? What was your exact strategy there?
So with the ELISA tests, you're looking at the MHIO-specific antibodies in the blood. And that's a good test, but ELISA tests cannot distinguish between antibodies which are there because of an infection or because of vaccination. And because breeding gilts are often vaccinated against MHIO, it does not really give you an answer on is this animal now infected or not, because those antibodies can be present because of vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in ELISA tests, it takes some time before antibodies arrive in the blood. So if you do an ELISA test shortly after infection, you will not find antibodies, although the animal is infected. So that's why we went to the tracheobronchial swabs and the PCR testing. Because with the tracheobronchial swab, you take samples very low in the respiratory tract, and then you see with PCR if the DNA of the pathogen is present. You can also take swabs in the more upper respiratory tract, so laryngeal swabs, for example, but they are way less sensitive. So the deeper in the respiratory tract you take your sample, the higher the chance of finding the DNA of the bacteria with a PCR test.
Yeah, I think they compare it a little bit to the media. ELISA is more reporting on something what may have happened in the past, whereas PCR is more like real-time reporting.
Yeah, indeed, you can state it like that.
I like it when it comes back to my working sphere as well. Let me see. Your conclusion here was that the gills are more often infected with MHIO than SOWS. Do you have an explanation for that?
Yes, because like I said, on most forms, MHIO is present. So it is like a permanent circulation on that form, and breeding animals are often permanent present on the form. So MHIO is circulating in the sows on the form. When gills are bought, which is often done, they are introduced into a population where MHIO is circulating. And the gills, they are younger, their immunity is not boosted so much times. They probably did not had contact with MHIO already. So when they then come in contact with the sows and the farm where MHIO is circulating, they are like a negative, very susceptible population where it can easily start circulating again. So that's why in gills, we often find it more an MHIO infection than in the sows.
I see. So parity did make a difference.
Yes, then. Indeed.
I see. This part also highlights the importance of proper gilt acclimatization and vaccination, and even if the gilts are purchased from a negative farms. Could you explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, purchasing from a negative farm is something good, I think. But when you introduce them to an MHIO positive herd, yeah, they are the negative susceptible population. So you need to protect them a little bit. Therefore, it's a good idea to put them, of course, in a quarantine unit, not only for MHIO, but also for all other diseases, and to vaccinate them properly against MHIO. But it's important to know that when you vaccinate, it actually takes 4 weeks before a good immunity against the pathogen is developed. So when you vaccinate them, they should at least stay for the next 4 weeks in that quarantine to make sure their immunity is very good by the time you introduce them to the sow population. And so vaccination is there, quarantine is very important, and sometimes it can also be useful to keep the gilts and the sows separated till the weaning of the first litter, just to prevent that they can infect each other. And imagine that the gilts were infected with MHIO. By the time the first litter is weaned, they have probably turned already negative again. And then there is no risk anymore that they can reinfect sows that were already in the population.
I see. If I listen to you, that requires quite a lot of accurate timing to make sure that every step is followed in the right order. In practice, on a big farm, would people be able to implement that kind of planning?
I think the most important thing in practice on a pig farm is first to know what's the MHIO status of your breeding population, because it really makes a difference if the sows that are already on the farm, if they are MHIO positive or not. So a correct sampling and getting an idea of that is very important. And then you can take a step further, like if I now buy some gills, what are the best things to do? I don't say you should do everything, because on a farm, yeah, okay, in theory you should, but in practice I know it is most of the time not feasible. So, but when you first do some sampling and you have an idea of the MHIO on your farm, you can decide on what the best steps are for your farm specifically.
I see. Well, so far for the first part, let's move on to the second part, and where we zoom into the farrowing room, so the area where with sows and with piglets. We call that part the transfer study. You even received an award for best poster presentation at the European Symposium for Porcine Health Management in 2021 for that. In short, what was the aim of this study and what was your conclusion there?
So when sows and gilts have an immunity against MHIO, we know that this MHIO-specific immunity is transferred to the piglets when the piglets suckle colostrum of those animals. It is known that antibodies are transferred very well to the blood of the piglets, but we also want to look if immune cells that are present in the colostrum of the sows are also transferred to the piglets, and if they are really be able to be active in the piglet when the piglet gets infected with MHIO, and turned out that besides the antibodies, also MHIO-specific cells are transferred from the sow to the piglet via colostrum.
I see. And it's only via colostrum. It's not through blood or at birth that whilst they are still in the uterus, that there is also some kind of immunity being transferred.
No, it's not like in humans. So the placenta of the sow is very thick. There are multiple layers which prevent that antibodies and immune cells are already transferred to the piglets during the pregnancy. So it's only after birth they are born completely without immunity. You really have to suckle this colostrum to get immunity from their mother sow.
No, even more good to know that how important that the colostrum is every time again. What does this study tell us about early cross-fostering of pigs? Does it have any impact on MHIO maternal immunity?
There were studies done in the past that showed that if piglets suckle colostrum from a foster sow, that antibodies are transferred, but that immune cells are not transferred. So we tried it, of course. So we cross-fostered piglets before colostrum uptake to a foster sow, and we looked, of course, only for Mycoplasma haeus pneumoniae-specific immunity, if this had an influence. And we were not able to find a difference in MHIO-specific cells coming from the mother between piglets that suckled colostrum from their mother sow and piglets that suckled colostrum from a foster sow. So I don't want to tell with this that you should cross-foster piglets very fast after birth, because there are, of course, some negative influences as well on that. But there is no negative influence on transfer of antibodies and immune cells when you do it.
I see. Yeah, that's the bit the same. There's a lot more than MHIO to think about in a swine farm, but it is good to keep that aspect in mind when you want to decide whether or not to cross foster sows. The third area of interest was finishing pigs in your study, and here you did what you call a persistence study, and you looked at immunity in fattening pigs. Again, could you briefly share the setup of that study and why it was important to know that?
In practice, piglets are often vaccinated against MHIO somewhere around weaning, and the goal is to protect them against MHIO diseases till the end of the fattening period, so till the moment of slaughter, which is 6 months of age here in Belgium. So, but it's not known actually if this MHIO-specific immunity there because of vaccination really persists till the moment they are slaughtered. So that's what we try to investigate. So we vaccinated piglets at 16 days of age, and we followed them up till slaughter to see what happens with MHIO-specific antibodies and with MHIO-specific cell-mediated immunity during their life.
Now, the conclusions of that third study require some explanation, at least for me, because on one hand, you conclude that some T cells, part of the immune system, decrease during the first months of life, whereas others remain present. What does that mean in practice, and why is it important to know this?
So first of all, it's important to know that all our animals became seronegative for MHIO at 2 months of age. So no antibodies against MHIO were detected anymore then. For investigating the cell-mediated immunity, we did two tests. So there was one test taking a look at production of cytokines of T cells, and there was another test looking at proliferation response of those T cells after we stimulated them with MHIO in the laboratory. And the test where we looked at the cytokines indeed showed that after 3 months of age, there was less cytokine production by those T cells, but the proliferation of the T cells remained present till slaughter age. So here we can conclude that MHIO-specific cell-mediated immunity remained present till slaughter age, although it's not always so visible in the blood anymore. But this is also quite logic, because those T cells don't keep circulating in the blood all the time. They just go out of the blood to local tissue. So it's not because we cannot find it in the blood anymore at a high level that it's not there anymore, because local immunity is also very important. And that's something that we should keep in mind. It's not because you don't find antibodies anymore in the blood or no high levels of those MHIO-specific cells that there is no MHAO-specific immunity in the body present anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. So that makes sense. Well, thank you for taking the time to explain that. If you look back and the things that we discussed in the podcast, what main conclusions did you draw of your studies?
I think an important conclusion is that MHAO is circulating in breeding populations in most forms. So I investigated 10 forms, and on most of the forms, MHAO was detected in this breeding population. So this really shows that a proper acclimation and focus in this breeding population is important to try to stop the cycle and the transmission to the piglets. I think that's something very important for practice. If we go more into research, of course, there were some interesting things on those cell-mediated immunity that might be investigated further to get more knowledge, which might be important for practice in the future, of course.
Okie dokies. And often researchers always say, oh, more research is needed in the future. Let's just ask that question. What do you think would be future lines of further research?
When I look at the cells and the gills, I think I did already a nice study, but it could have been extended a little bit more when starting to take samples already from the gills at the moment of purchase in the quarantine and to really follow up the same animals till weaning of the first litter. That's something I did not do. And I think that might be a nice study in the future to really get even a better overview on how MHAO behaves in this breeding population. So I think that's really something that can be done.
I see. And you've done your studies on 10 farms. What was their takeaway on it? Or anybody who's a big professional, what kind of practical takeaways are there for them? Can it help them to do their job better?
Yes, I think so, because I also saw that on most of those farms, gills were vaccinated against MHAO, so there were high levels of antibodies, but this does not necessarily mean that the animals were infected. So I think for the practitioner, it's important to know that if you suspect that there is MHAO problems on those farms, that you not only focus on the presence of antibodies, but that you really start taking ideally tracheobronchial swabs to test with a PCR to really see if this animal is infected at that moment. I think that would be something a practitioner should keep in mind.
So basically, they vaccinate against MHAO and later on they detect, there could be an infection. Or there may have been an infection.
Yeah, this is a little bit black and white. Of course, you can look at the antibody titers to get a better idea. But of course, the presence of antibodies, like I said, the ELISA cannot know, is it because of vaccination or is it because of infection? So you actually never know 100% sure. Unless your pigs are not vaccinated. But like I said, most breeding animals are vaccinated against MHAO at a young age.
I see. Okie dokies. I think we've covered that all pretty well. Just out of interest, your current activities include trying to find cost-effective ways of biosecurity. I find that interesting as well. Well, what could you share a little bit about what you're doing there?
Yeah, so it's a large European project, of course, and we are only doing some small parts of it. But in general, in this project, we want to make some practical things for the farmers based on what we study. So we are going to look like how are pathogens behaving? We're going to model them, like how big is the risk of having this pathogen introduced to your farm? And based on this information, we will make some guidelines for farmers on how they should improve biosecurity, how the biosecurity on the farm should be. And linked to that, we also want to take a look at the economical part of it, because that's, of course, also very important for a farmer. Like, if I do a few biosecurity measures, I introduce them to my farm, what will be the economic benefits of it, or what will be the economic loss if I don't do it and a pathogen arrives on my farm? So it's quite a complex thing in a bigger part of it, but I think some nice things can come out which might be very practical for farmers in the field.
Absolutely. I think improving biosecurity starts with, to say it very black and white, knowing your enemy. If you know how in detail how a pathogen behaves it's better to anticipate and to know what to do and what not to do.
Yes, indeed. Knowing makes that you can take some measures about it and that we can improve, of course.
Oh, very good. You're doing important work. Thank you very much, Dr. Bibaut. I think we'll have to draw things to an end now, because otherwise, we're going towards the 45 minutes, and I think we try to keep it at roughly 30, 35 minutes. I hope we have helped our listeners to advance their knowledge on MHIO a little bit, and I would like to thank you again, once again, to be with us today on the Meet the Expert podcast series. And a last reminder to our audience, you'll be able to find this episode as well as previous ones through the regular podcast channels as well as the Big Progress website. Just search for Meet the Expert by Big Progress and Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. Well, that was it for now. I thank you back home or in the office or in the farm for listening. I thanks to Dr. Bibaut for being with us, and goodbye.